innovation is the future. Literally. Innovation is the key to making sure you and your business have a future. Because if you aren't innovating, you are sitting around simply waiting to be passed by. Gary Hamel, considered as one of the world's most influential business thinkers, put it this way. Most of us understand that innovation is enormously important. It is the only insurance against irrelevance. It is the only guarantee of long-term customer loyalty. It is the only strategy for outperforming a dismal economy. Our question for our guest today is not why, but how. How do we innovate to avoid becoming irrelevant, both in business and in life? Jeff Dyer is the Horace Beasley Professor of Strategy. He is the author of The Innovator's DNA and the upcoming The Innovator's Method. He has studied the concept of innovation and practical innovation of various companies for years. It is our privilege now to pick his brain for the very best ideas on how we can be sure we are innovating no matter what. Jeff, such a pleasure to have you here at Success. Welcome.
Darren, it's delightful to be with you in Success today.
So let's start with the basics. Help us identify innovation when we see it. Describe what it is and then give us a few examples of it as well.
Yeah, well, so innovation really has three components to it. An innovation is something that's novel. It's an idea that's novel. It has to be useful and it has to be implemented. So if you have a great idea to put a vacation station on the moon, that may be a great idea, but it's not implemented. And so we only view that as a creative idea, but not necessarily as an innovation. So you actually have to have an idea that's useful and novel and implemented for it to be an innovation. And then, of course, we have different types of innovation. Some innovations are very incremental. So if we think about Gillette introducing a razor blade with 5 blades instead of 4 or 6 versus 5, yes, that's an innovation, but it tends to be very incremental in terms of how novel that is and how useful it is. Of course, when you see something like an iPod replacing a Discman or a Walkman, that becomes more of a radical innovation where it really changes the value proposition, where we can have 1,000 songs in our pocket as opposed to one CD disc, and we can actually put the device in our pocket as opposed to lugging it around in our hand. So when you think about innovations, we should be looking for things that are novel and they're useful, and then you got to implement it for it to be more than just a creative idea.
Fantastic. Now, I told you before we started, Jeff, that our audience is typically entrepreneurs, definitely innovative thinkers, no matter where they apply their profession. Would you describe entrepreneurs as inherently more innovative than the corporate business leader? And if so, how would you describe why that is?
So first of all, I think it's important to appreciate that there are different types of entrepreneurs. And we have to be a little bit careful about lumping them all together. If we define an entrepreneur as someone who has started a new business, the fact is that roughly 80% of entrepreneurs don't start innovative ventures. They launch another mortgage brokerage firm or an accounting firm or dry cleaner. But many of these businesses aren't something that's really innovative or unique. Now, there are about 15 to 20% of entrepreneurs who launch ventures that we would categorize as innovative, meaning that they are launching a new, different value proposition to the market that hasn't been launched before. So, of course, when Apple launched their first, you know, Apple computer, this was very different than what was out on the market at the time, and we think about that as an innovative venture. What we learned from our Innovators DNA research is that these types of entrepreneurs, they really are different than your typical corporate leader. In fact, they engage in 4 behaviors more frequently and intensively than typical managers. And these are questioning, observing, networking, and experimenting behaviors. By that I mean, these folks are more likely to question the status quo. They are much more likely to engage in observations of customers or other companies or new technologies. They're much more likely to network with people with diverse backgrounds and really try and get different backgrounds and perspectives on their ideas. And they're much more likely to run pilots and prototypes and really try and new adventures and try and experience new things. So what we do know is that entrepreneurs that launch innovative ventures engage those 4 behaviors more frequently to trigger new ideas more than a typical corporate leader.
Okay, great. Some of these questions I'm asking you to either debunk some presumptions or get clarity on what the answers might be. So talk about innovation on the individual level. Can anyone be innovative, or is this something that some people just don't have in them to do?
Yeah, so I think many of us think that creativity is a genetic endowment. We either have it or we don't. We're right-brained or we're left-brained. And so I think we often blame mom and dad because we just didn't get the creativity gene, right? But the fact of the matter is there's some interesting research that's been done in psychology where they've looked at identical twins who are genetically similar or identical, and then they try and figure out to what extent do they differ in terms of their creativity skills. And they'll also look at whether they're different in terms of their IQ or their general intelligence. Here's what they find. When they look at samples of identical twins, and the best ones are those where they were actually separated at birth and they grow up in different environments, they find that between the ages of 15 to 25, when they give them these intelligence tests, they find that about 80% of the performance is genetically based. In other words, your ability to memorize facts and figures, to solve little puzzles, to be able to do well on the standardized tests that we give, you know, SATs, ACTs, and so on, that stuff is largely genetic. So if you don't do well on those kinds of tests, maybe you can blame mom and dad for not getting the genetics. But on the creativity tests, interestingly enough, they find that only about a third of the performance is genetically based. So there's something we learn along the way from our culture in our country. It can be our educational systems. It can be our family culture, our religious culture, that just something simple like being able to ask a question that challenges the status quo, that's something that we can learn. And that means that people can get better at it. And so I think that's actually the really good news of this more recent research is that if you don't feel like you're very creative, in fact, if you learn how to become a better questioner, that one skill alone will help you to become a better innovator.
Well, speaking of which, let me ask you another question. Tell us what the biggest obstacle is then to innovation or innovative thinking. What is it typically?
I would say that overwhelmingly we hear the biggest obstacle to innovation is time. The fact is innovation takes time. You've got to make time for it. You've got to spend time thinking about, even obsessing about ideas that you think will make a difference. Let me give you an example. Each year, we at Innovators DNA rank Forbes' list of most innovative companies based upon a concept we call their innovation premium. Now, the innovation premium is the premium that investors pay because they expect bigger income streams than those being generated by the company's existing business. So it's sort of like how much more you're willing to pay for the stock than really the value of their existing businesses. Now, why would you be willing to pay more? Because you're expecting innovation and growth. And so we identify these companies that are the most innovative based upon investors betting with their wallets which companies are going to grow more in the future through innovation. Then what we've done is we've sampled and surveyed and studied the leaders of those companies. And we've compared them with the leaders of companies of just an average business that really isn't on the innovation list or is really struggling with innovation. And here's what we found. We found that 31% of the time of leaders in those innovative companies is spent on innovation. They're trying to come up with new ideas for their company that will bring new things to the market. So when you think about a Jeff Bezos at Amazon, a Mark Benioff at Salesforce.com, Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook, certainly a Steve Jobs, those guys don't just delegate innovation. They do it. They take the time. They make the time.
So let's use some high-level reference points here to start inspiring us and giving us examples of what we might be wanting or needing to do in our own organizations. Give us, you talked about Jeff Bezos. So give us three key factors that explain how companies like Amazon or Google or Starbucks all maintain high levels of innovation. What do they do?
First of all, I would start with time. So if you go to Amazon or Google, you're going to find that they allocate a significant amount of time towards innovation activities. You know, Google has their 20% time for engineers where engineers have one day a week to work on a project that they propose to management. Management still has to approve it. This idea usually gets vetted on an internal idea board where people inside Google can vote on it and whether they think it's a good idea. In fact, if they think it's a really good idea, they'll say, hey, I want to work on that project for my own 20% innovation time. So the ideas that get a lot of support and form teams on their own, now they're given time to work on ideas that they care about. And we know that innovation's more likely to come from people who are working on ideas that they care about personally. So first, of course, then is making sure people have the time to really work on innovation. Second, I think one of the things that companies like Amazon and Google do really well is that they make sure that most of their employees are on some sort of innovation project team. So Amazon calls these two pizza teams, where the team has to be small enough to be fed by two pizzas. So teams of 5 to 10 people then pursue an innovative project or idea. So Amazon and Google have this portfolio of teams out there working on a variety of different innovation projects and ideas. And when you have you're planting lots of seeds, then you get a lot of flowers that bloom. So they're out there running lots of experiments, and pretty much everyone's on some type of innovation project team that produces more innovation at the company level. And then I think the third thing that they do is that these teams are taught how to test and validate their ideas using a process that I like to call the innovator's method. So innovators are really good at conducting fast and frugal experiments to really nail the problem they're trying to solve, nail the solution that they have for that problem, and then they're trying to nail that business model of how to take this idea to market before they invest in it. So this is a process that essentially reduces the risks associated with innovation because they nail the innovation and the solution before they invest to scale it. So we're really talking about processes of rapid experimentation. And those fast and frugal experiments are one of the keys to innovation at companies like Amazon and Google.
So let's go into the method. Let's say that at this point we have inspired the listening audience to why they have to innovate. Either innovate or you're going to get eaten by the fast-changing economy or eaten by your competitors. And we've inspired them by the examples of Amazon, Google, Starbucks, and the rest of it. So now they're sitting there with notepad in hand, ready for instructions on what the innovator's method is. Take us through the four steps of the innovator's method.
Yeah, so the first step of the innovator's method is to generate an insight. And this is an insight that comes through observation, through talking to people, but it's an insight that leads you to believe there's an opportunity. Let me give you an example. Jen Hyman was an MBA student at the Harvard Business School. She went home for Thanksgiving break, and she was having Thanksgiving dinner, and her sister Becky was agonizing about what to wear to a friend's wedding event. Now, she watched her sister agonize, and she said, you know, didn't you buy a designer dress or two? Can't you just wear that? She said, yes, I saved up my money. I bought a couple of designer dresses, but I've now been seen in those designer dresses on Facebook and other places at different events. I can't be seen in that same dress again, and I can't afford another designer dress. So Jen thinks about this, and she does this observation, and she gets an idea that maybe what she could do to solve Jen's problem would be to rent designer dresses over the internet, like Netflix rents CDs or DVDs. And so that's the first step is, okay, you generate an insight that you think might be an opportunity. But now the question is, step two, how do I know if this is really an opportunity worth pursuing? You want to test and validate that idea before you invest to launch it. So what does Jen do? She goes to Harvard and she sets up some experiments before special occasions at the campus where women would want to wear a nice dress. And what she does is she tests renting designer dresses. So she buys a few, she borrows as many as she can, And then she sets up shop to see if she can rent designer dresses at 1/10 the cost of those designer dresses to see how many other sort of women of that college age have that same problem. And to what extent do they really want to rent a designer dress? She has many of these young women who come in and they desperately want to rent a designer dress. She thinks she's nailed a problem worth solving. Now she has to prototype a solution. Setting up shops around the country where people can physically see designer dresses and rent them. So she sets up a prototype of this sort of new business model where she sends emails to 1,000 women in New York in her target market with PDFs of, you know, photos of a wide variety of designer dresses, letting them know they could rent, you know, a dress for this next special occasion. And what she finds is that 5% of the women actually will rent a designer dress over the internet based upon these photos. Now she knows she's got a business model, but she learned something important about her solution from that experiment. Number one, women are really worried about whether or not the dress will fit. And two, they often want advice on accessories or shoes or other things to wear with the dress. And so what she does is she now elaborates on her solution by being willing to send anyone who rents a dress 2 dress sizes instead of 1 to make sure it fits. And they will have fashion advisors who will advise the clients very much like you'd find a friend advising another friend on accessories and shoes and so on. And she gets such strong positive response to this. Now she knows that she can launch this business. So she doesn't invest until she's very sure that she's validated that it will work. Then she goes and gets an investment from a VC firm to build the website and to launch the business and to scale it. And so now she's ready to really launch a successful business model. So the innovator's method starts with an insight, moves to a problem where you're validating that this is a problem we're solving. Then it moves to prototyping solutions to that problem. And this is where rapid experimentations and lean startup comes in. And then finally, you've got to figure out your business model and your go-to-market strategy. Again, you try, if you can, to validate all of these before you launch. And this helps take the risk out of innovation through these 4 steps of the innovator's method.
Okay, well, appreciate you outlining the steps. What occurs to me is like, there's another reason not to post your pictures on Facebook.
All right. Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you've got to have a new wardrobe 365 days a year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, and by the way, Darren, let me just tell you, I recently learned, it was published that Rent the Runway, which is the business that Jen Hyman started, they outfitted 80% of the women at President Obama's last inauguration, his second inauguration.
Huh, that is incredible. So Jeff, let's be sure that those that are listening are probably the leaders of their organizations so that they're not the only ones sitting around thinking about how we need to iterate, pivot, change, or innovate inside our companies. How do we nurture this innovative thinking through our entire organization?
So I think a company that has over the last 5 to 7 years really improve their ability to do just what you're talking about, get everybody involved in innovation, is Intuit, the maker of QuickBooks and Quicken, TurboTax, and so on. The leaders of the company, Scott Cook and Brad Smith, Scott was one of the original founders, Brad's the CEO now, they realized that the company was reaching this sort of bend in the growth curve that we know from the famous S-curve. You know, in the mid-2000s, they just were not getting the growth. They weren't getting the new ideas. And so they decided they wanted to see what they could do to get everybody more involved in innovation. So here's some of the things they did. First of all, they did a company-wide training around generating insights around awesome ideas. And they defined what does awesome mean, and they got into this issue of awesome is really, you know, if you can do something that's surprising and unexpected, then the customer is going to really think that that's awesome. You know, that's the kind of response you'll evoke from the customer. And so they first of all tried to get everyone sort of thinking about ideas that might produce something that's awesome for the customer or that might delight the customer. And then what they did is they set up a system that they called Brainstorm to capture the insights that you might have in the course of the work you're doing. And they also gave what they called unstructured time. 10% of every employee at Intuit is devoted to innovation. So you've got 10% of your time that's your innovation time. And then they have a system to capture the insight. Once they've captured insights from people internally and they've gotten feedback and people can sort of generate a team and some enthusiasm for an idea, then they'll often run them through a workshop they call the Lean Start-In workshop, where they'll teach them how to painstorm, for example. That's their word for brainstorming, but it's brainstorming about the pains the customers feel. So it's really trying to understand the problem the customers face and the big pains and what are the specific pain points and how could we fix them. And then they'll go through another set of what they call solution storming or a solution jam or a soul jam. And as they do that, then that's one way that they will now go what they call go broad to go narrow. They'll go broad, generating as many solution ideas as possible, and then they'll try and go narrow from that point to narrow down to the few that they think might be awesome with customers. And then they really go out and they test those with customers. And so what they have done at Intuit is they've started to institutionalize some of these innovators' method processes. And that whole process of educating the entire company and then giving people the opportunity to be the leader of their idea and take their idea through this process has really energized the company. And what we've seen in the last 3 to 4 years is that they've doubled their market value. Their innovation premium has gone from 20% to 30%, which is a significant jump. And the CEO, Brad Smith, said that they have increased their new products launched to market in the last 3 years by tenfold. So it seems to be making a difference at Intuit.
So, Jeff, we've talked about how innovation and the innovator's method relates to business, but explain how this relates to our lives, because surely innovation isn't only meant for business. Tell us how we can also apply this idea, this framework, into our personal lives.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think actually one of the best places to try and experiment with these ideas is actually at home, maybe, you know, with your family, even your kids. So when I first learned of the value of questioning, I decided I would ask a different question to my kids when they came home from school. So, Darren, I don't know if you've got kids, but what do you think is the typical question that a parent asks their child when they come home from school?
How was your day?
How was your day?
Right.
And what do you get?
Fine. Yeah.
You get nothing, right?
Right.
I mean, you really don't get anything. So I thought, what if I could change the question to see if I could learn more about my child and what they were experiencing at school and what they were really learning and what they cared about. So at the time, my oldest son, Aaron, was a sophomore in high school. He came home. I asked him a different question. And the question was, Aaron, tell me, what was the best question that you heard today at school? Or was there a question that you wanted to ask, but you just didn't feel like you could ask it? Of course, his initial response is, oh, Dad, what are you trying to pull, right? But then I persisted, and we walked through his day, starting with biology. I quickly learned there was no question in biology that he cared about. But his next class was an engine fundamentals class about cars and engines. And he had questions that he said he hadn't asked that really interested him. I learned something new that day about my son, about what he liked, what questions he had, because I asked a different question. I experimented with something new. So when you see a problem or an issue or something at home, I think, one of the things you can do is you can try and experiment. You can ask a different question. And those things can help you solve problems that are, you know, personal and family related that aren't for business at all.
Well, I hope that our questions of you have inspired some innovative ideas in our listeners. Before we let you go, Jeff, however, I'd love for you to share a personal tip on how you, the guy who talks about innovation, manages to stay innovative himself. What do you do regularly to keep yourself from becoming stagnated?
Well, I struggle with this like everybody else, but I would say that the one thing I do try to do whenever possible is to follow the advice that was given in a book that I read titled Never Eat Alone. It's a great idea to try and eat with different people who have different backgrounds and perspectives. So if I could add an addendum to that book, I would say never eat alone, or at least don't eat with someone who thinks like you, if at all possible. The point is, I find I get a lot of good ideas from talking to others. And a lot of times the more novel ones come from people who have different backgrounds and perspectives than I do. So at least for me, I find I like to get new ideas through networking. And if I can try and plan mealtime as a way to meet new people, and especially people with different backgrounds and perspectives, then it tends to prompt new ideas that help me to be a little bit more innovative. And I think really anybody in any company, if we take a little bit more time to even talk to people that work in different areas and different functions of the company, much less people that work in different industries and professions altogether, I think that would go a long way to cross-fertilizing ideas that can make a difference for each of us.
I agree, and certainly they can listen to and learn from lots of different people here on our Success Magazine CD. Thank you so much, Jeff, for being with us here and for sharing your innovative ideas and method with us here at Success. Thanks for being with us today, Jeff.
Thanks again, Darren. It's been a real pleasure.